This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Over the coming 6 months, Lake Effect, WUWM News, and Milwaukee Public Television are examining the impact of Wisconsin's and Milwaukee's high rate of incarceration among African-American men. Wisconsin has the highest rate in the country, and the statistics in Milwaukee County are even higher. The issue is attracting the attention of many community groups, members of the legal system, churches, and the media as far away as Great Britain.
I have people that have come in and be like, I will work for minimum wage, you know, I just want to work. But they won't open the door, you know. It's hard, man. It's hard.
It comes to that point where it says, like, well, what choice do I have? I can't get a job, so, but knowing that I have to keep, you know, keep thinking positive, you know, I can't really give up.
That's a clip from a BBC News report called Why Does Wisconsin Send So Many Black People to Jail? But it all started with the research that first brought the figures to light. Lois Quinn is a senior scientist in the Employment and Training Institute at UW-Milwaukee's School of Continuing Education. She's co-author of the report, Wisconsin's Mass Incarceration of African-American Males, Workforce Challenges for 2013. Lois Quinn, welcome back to Lake Effect.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Why did you approach the issue of black male incarceration from a workforce perspective in the first place?
I'm with the Employment and Training Institute, and most of the work that we do is related to employment issues or how families deal with poverty in Central City, Milwaukee. And this issue, we did come in the back door. We looked at employment first, and one of the major barriers to employment that keeps coming up with the Workforce Investment Board, with the city, is incarceration and history of prison terms. And so we've looked at it in zip code 53206, arguably the poorest neighborhood in Milwaukee, but we never looked at it for the community. So this was a look at the entire community.
And the report opened a lot of eyes when it first came out. But before we talk about what it means, I really think we should put it in perspective. What are the most striking statistics in your eyes?
There was nothing more devastating to me than the discovery that over half of young African American men in Milwaukee County have already served time in state prison. This was just staggering to me. Even in fact, statewide, 49% of African American men in their 30s have already spent time in prison. That so many men in the community would have already been incarcerated and have those prison records hanging over them for the rest of their working lives was just an amazingly disturbing statistic.
It also seemed to show Wisconsin and the Milwaukee area in particular as an outlier compared to its comparable states, whether in the Midwest or other parts of the country.
We did all the research on prison terms first using State Department of Correction databases that had all the adults who've been incarcerated since 1990. So we had really completed the study and then decided to look at 2010 census data to see how Wisconsin compared. And we knew incarceration of African American males was staggering everywhere. But what was amazing to find was that Wisconsin was totally an outlier, that we have incarcerated a higher percentage of African-American men, according to the decennial census, than any other state in the union, and we're way beyond the second state, Oklahoma.
Well, and as you look at this issue and the many issues that play into it, what do you see as the tipping point that got Milwaukee County and Wisconsin on this road?
We followed the same trajectory that the rest of the country did, I think, in terms of embracing a war on drugs, building prisons using a lot of federal money and some state money, adopting laws that were mandatory minimum sentences, really taking an approach to drugs, which is incarceration first. Treatment maybe, but always incarceration.
Right. But as you say, Wisconsin was not unique in this way.
Right. In some ways, I'm disappointed because now so much of the focus is on why is Wisconsin an outlier and not on what in the world are we going to do about the half of the African-American community who's already been incarcerated. But it's a legitimate question. we have a much younger African-American population than most metro areas. Of the 50 largest metro areas, our African-American is third youngest. Migration to Milwaukee came late. Many of the northern cities had job opportunities for factory work in the 20s and 30s. Ours didn't open up until the war, World War II period. So we had a late arrival of the African-American population. We have a very small middle-class African-American population for a whole host of reasons that the NAACP and the Urban League could talk about at length. But that, too, means that we're not attracting older, established professionals in numbers that you would expect in other places. When the drug war started, the target group was always the young, and boy, did we have them. We had large numbers of young African-American males. Add to that intense racial segregation in Milwaukee, limited job opportunities when manufacturing slowed down, and you've got a very toxic combination. And then on the plus side, if you can call it that, very effective police force, very effective policing, and a legislature very aggressive about adding offenses that are mandatory prison sentences. So good enforcement coupled with really awful economic conditions and a very young population.
And you would make the contention that these were not necessarily similar factors in states like, say, Minnesota or Michigan.
Well, Minnesota is held out because it took a very different route, and they have increasingly adopted drug treatment options as the first response to dealing with their drug problems rather than incarceration. They've got a very similar African-American population proportionately, but they've got very, very different outcomes. And that's a state I think we have to look very seriously at as an alternative way to deal with this.
You also write quite a bit about the idea of driver's licenses being a sub-issue to this. Where do they come in?
We've been studying the driver's license for over 20 years. Because it is a huge barrier to employment, particularly in a community like Milwaukee where most of the job opportunities now are not along bus lines but are outside of the established city. I think that's also what makes us an outlier. We have very aggressively suspended and revoked licenses for people for failure to pay fines. In effect, driving while poor is the most frequent reason for suspensions. Almost never will we allow community service as an alternative to not paying your speeding fine, your rolling through the traffic light, even parking in front of your street overnight. And so we've created this situation where the majority of African Americans do not have valid driver's licenses, and they become easy targets for police stops because as soon as that car is stopped, the person in it most likely does not have a valid license. And then their troubles with the law recycle once again.
There are probably many people who are listening to this interview who might say, you know, the problem isn't that so many men are going to jail for their behavior. It's that they're doing this behavior in the first place. They're committing crimes or getting caught up in crimes and that they shouldn't be driving with drugs in their cars or on suspended licenses, say. And they'd say, why isn't it the criminal behavior itself that's being addressed?
We have a place up north and every weekend at 2 in the morning, I hear cars driving on the road. And I would bet you that if the local sheriff or the local police stopped those cars and gave sobriety tests, they could find most of those people over the limit. They're driving home from the bar very late. We don't do that. We stop drunk drivers when they hit other people. We rarely stop them just because at 2 in the morning we know they're drunk. Okay. That said, our image of a drug sale and stop and frisk is you see action going on in the corner, the police swoop in and they stop the drug dealer. But that's not how almost all the arrests are made in Milwaukee. The police stop a car for something totally unrelated to drugs, driving with a taillight out, can't see the license plate because the light is bad, old car, rolling through the stoplight, running the stoplight. And then they search for drugs and they search for weapons. And if that person has been in prison and is on supervision, then they've automatically violated their supervision. But the stop wasn't triggered by a crime. The crime was created, in effect, once the search took place in the car. And the chief, by his own statistics, has 500 cars stopped a day in Milwaukee. And so that's the net that we're casting on the poorest populations. Granted, they're in the most dangerous neighborhoods, but that's the net where we're stopping people.
The chief would also make the point that and has repeatedly that African Americans are disproportionately victims of crimes in these areas. And he's responding to and his department is responding to a climate that says we need to do something to protect the people who aren't committing crimes or are otherwise caught up in this situation. Where does the idea of African Americans as victims in this and in these neighborhoods come in?
Clearly, you need the law enforcement in the city. And I'm sympathetic to the chief. That's his job, law enforcement. And we've got one big tool, which is jail and prison. And that's the tool we use. Reverend Willie Briscoe from MICA, the organization of religious groups that are working on these issues, you know, said he would declare a state of emergency given the high rates of incarceration, the number of men who don't have jobs, who can't get jobs, and who are serving time in prison. The district attorney talks about he wants the money that is used to divert men from prison into drug treatment. He wants that money used for alternatives. So I guess in a way I'd say, yes, we have to make the central city safe. My daughter teaches in an inner city school. I bleed for those children who, when they hear a sound that is a car popping, they hit the floor because they know in their own homes they are not safe. But we won't make them safe if the only thing we do is lock up their parents and everybody else who violates the law. We have to get a lot more concerned about joblessness, about poverty, about driver's licenses, and less willing to say, I'll go to the state legislature and in 2 weeks they'll give me one more law where people will be sent to prison.
You would make the case that we can't necessarily legislate our way out of this situation.
Not with prison. And the unfortunate thing is we built so many of them nationally, and it's just too easy to keep them full and too easy to say, well, there's a whole economy built around the prisons, and not to say any other country in the world would look at the United States with the highest incarceration rate and say, what in the world are they doing to that people? Aren't those part of their population? Everyone's shocked, I think, but us.
Do you see maybe – is it not that the problem, not that the arrests are happening at all, but what's happening after the arrests?
I think the arrests are a problem in the sense that the arrests are not for the purpose for which the charge is made. And so in that sense, yes. But also, frankly, it's not fair that the city continues to charge people in the poorest neighborhoods to park in front of their street and then suspends their licenses when they can't pay it. The city takes away more driver's licenses from its residents than any other governmental body. We do it to ourselves. They ticket families who are waiting at the welfare department to sign up for food stamps because their meter has expired. So a lot of it is just we want to continue doing the practices that worked in some middle-class world of the past when people did something wrong, they paid the money, and then it went away. Now we want to inflict that on people who don't have the money to pay. We've created this very troubling, I think, criminal justice system. A man gets stopped. He's violated the law. He's got drugs. He's a drug dealer. He's done a violent or nonviolent crime. If he's poor, he almost always pleads out. He confesses to crimes. He gets a reduced sentence, but he also gets supervision held over his head later so that when he messes up because he's not going to find a job, his criminal record is totally on the internet for every employer to see. When he messes up, he goes back to prison for all those offenses that he never had a jury trial or a decent lawyer for. So we've put the poor in this really caste system of criminal justice, lesser rights, and then once they mess up, as many inevitably do, back to prison and then for very long periods of time.
Let's say you're listening to this interview in some other part of the state, whether it's Waukesha or Eau Claire or Rhinelander. How do you make the case that what's happening, especially in six zip codes in Central City, Milwaukee, is important to the rest of the state at large?
We've been asked by at least four counties to study their counties because they are concerned that the same thing is happening there and nobody's looked at it. So I'm not sure this is a Milwaukee-only problem. And I know for African Americans, given that virtually half of the African American men in the state in their 30s have been in state prison, this is not a Milwaukee thing. It's going on in Milwaukee more intensely, but I think it's happening throughout the state. And for non-black, for white offenders, this is the same situation. Do we benefit by having them spend years in state prison? When they come out, do they become productive citizens or do they find they can't find employment? It's a drag on the economy. The state budget, Governor Walker initially was going to change it, but in the end he raised it. The state spends more state money on prisons than on the entire University of Wisconsin system, UW-Madison, UW-Milwaukee, all the other four-year campuses and the two-year campuses. Very skewed up. It is one of the most expensive items in the state budget. And those prisons are filled with people from all over the state who get released to all over the state.
Well, Lois Quinn, thanks so much for helping get this conversation going.
You're welcome. It's good to be here.
Lois Quinn is a senior scientist in the Employment and Training Institute at UW-Milwaukee's School of Continuing Education. She's co-author of the report, Wisconsin's Mass Incarceration of African-American Males, Workforce Challenges for 2013, along with John Pawasarat. You'll find a link to that report on our website. You can also hear Aaron Toner's report from WUWM News this morning on our Project Milwaukee series page at WUWM.com. A break now, and when we return, we'll visit with Kyle Recklitz, the second-year coach of the UW-Milwaukee Panthers women's basketball team, and look ahead to this season. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.